Welcome to the Poem of the Week. Each week, our poems are intended to help you practice the best, most current medicine by alerting you to studies that could change your practice. As usual, our host this week is National Public Radio's Dr. Michael Wilkes and Essential Evidence Senior Editor Dr. Mark A. Bell. Gentlemen.
Good day, Mark. How are you doing?
Fine. Our cars are all being colored yellow down here in Georgia with the pollen, so we're in the middle of it.
You know, I do a fair amount of traveling, and one of the things that is most notable when you do travel, particularly when one travels to Southern Europe or Asia, is the huge disproportionate difference between the number of people in the U.S. who smoke and the number of people abroad, particularly in those countries. One of the highest, most impacted group are teenagers, and it is important to understand that the tobacco industry spends a lot of time and attention attracting teenagers with the not a belief, but the firm knowledge that once they get them hooked as teenagers, they're far more likely to continue smoking as adults. It is important, again, to look at some of these statistics. The statistics I'm about to share with you come from the Centers for Disease Control. Among adults who smoke, almost three-quarters, 68%, began smoking when they were 18 years or younger. And every day, almost 4,000 children under the age of 18 try a cigarette for the first time. And of them, almost 1,950 become new regular daily smokers. 20% of high school students reported smoking in the last 30 days of a recent study. The good news is that this is down 45% from 1997, but it's still an enormous figure. Among high school students in 2007, the most recent data for which we've got statistics, the most prevalent form of tobacco were still cigarettes at 20%, cigars at 14%. I'm not sure I've seen a cigar-smoking teenager, but perhaps that's just because I'm in California. And smokeless tobacco at about 8%. 12% of middle school students report smoking, and Kentucky is the state that led the nation in teenage smokers. It was followed quickly by Arkansas, which landed in second place, that had slightly more than 13% of teens. After Arkansas was Wyoming, West Virginia, and Oklahoma. Now here comes a little bit of a bragging right. As for the state with the lowest percentage of teenage smokers, that would be Utah. I can't brag about that. But California was just a smidge behind. California was followed by Hawaii. So we've got a problem here. We know that as these smokers continue, they're going to develop all kinds of systemic problems. We know that about 50% of them will end up dying of smoking-related illness. So you've chosen an article from the Annals of Internal Medicine. It asks a very simple question, one that everyone in primary care has to deal with, and that is, what are the strategies that are effective in reducing tobacco use in children and adults? Mark, what did this is a U.S. Preventive Health Task Force report. What did they find?
Well, I found that no one actually knows the name of our task force. It's the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force, Mike, and get it right, okay? I've heard about 12 different versions of it since I've been on it. So anyway, yeah, this is used the standard, very rigorous methodology for trying to look at what is the best evidence regarding interventions that we can do in the primary care setting to help children, adolescents, either not begin smoking or quit smoking once they start. And they found, they did the usual very careful search. This was done by the Evidence-Based Practice Center. Carrie Patnode, Elizabeth O'Connor, Evelyn Whitlock led that. And they reviewed all the data. They found that there were some studies targeting children, some parents, some both. And they only included studies where there was some kind of a comparison group, some kind of a control group where there was no intervention or waitlisting. And most studies used self-report of smoking. And that can sometimes overestimate because people, and including adolescents, have been, this will come as a shock, known to lie about their smoking behavior. So that's one limitation. They found 18 studies looking at preventing initiation or promoting cessation in young people. And most of the interventions were brief counseling in a medical or a dental office. And overall, they did find a small decrease. If you did this in your practice routinely compared to not doing it, you had an absolute reduction of about 2%. So let's say 20% down to 18% of kids who would initiate smoking at the end of the trial period. So not a large increase, or I'm sorry, not a large decrease, but you know, it's a very, very important health risk behavior. So even a 2% absolute reduction, I think, is clinically meaningful. The more elaborate interventions and using, behavior-based interventions or using bupropion, Wellbutrin, improved cessation rates. So there really wasn't any good data on cessation in this group. No evidence of heterogeneity, so the studies were pretty consistent. And basically, the bottom line is, if you got kids 11 to 17 years, brief advice to not start smoking can be helpful. You're not going to see a huge bump, but you will see some benefit.
A couple of points here. One is that so much of this is due to peer pressure, and so much of it is due to social modeling. And so I wonder if anybody's looked at the impact of role models in movies and TV shows, comment one. Comment two is, wearing my public health hat, I may be mistaken, but I was always under the assumption that one of the most effective ways to stop or decrease bad behaviors, but particularly cigarettes, was to increase the cost. In other words, to increase the tax on them. I would expect that that would be even more effective with teens that are more cost conscious than adults.
Well, that kind of a policy community level intervention wasn't considered. The scope of what the task force looks at is what goes on in a doctor's office, basically, or referable from primary care. But there has been research looking at the association between the cost per pack and smoking rates, and there is generally an inverse association. The higher you make the cost, the lower the smoking rates. I don't know if they've ever separated out adolescents from all smokers, but certainly if you look overall at smoking rates in by state, for example, you see a difference. And it's kind of frustrating here being in Georgia, where the CDC is housed, where the Community Guide to Preventive Services is located, and we have among the lowest tobacco taxes in the country. And every year, some lonely Democratic legislator tries to get something through the Georgia House, which is now a supermajority House, and can't get anything started in terms of tobacco taxes. So it's really unfortunate. And there I will end my political statement. But I do think increasing the cost is a clear win-win in terms of revenue, in terms of decreasing smoking and decreasing long-term health costs.
Well, great. Thanks, Mark. Good advice from the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force.
Very
always good.
Good
to read their reports and have them summarized. Thanks so much. We'll talk with you again next week.
All right. Talk to you then.
That's this week's poem. Thanks for listening. If you'd like to look at this and other recent poems, please go to www.infopoems.com. Please join us again next week for another medical poem.